All right, good afternoon, everyone. Pleasure to be with you. Again, my name is Jay Dempsey. I'm with Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. Specifically, I'm with CDC's National Center for Environmental Health and CDC's sister agency, which is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. So what that basically means is I have a really long voicemail greeting. I'll be referring to the dual agencies as NCH and ATSDR throughout this presentation. But what I'm going to do is take you through a case study of how we used social media right around this time last year during Hurricane Sandy. Okay, so basically I'm going to be describing to you that social media can be a valuable tool for disseminating helpful emergency response information during and immediately following a disaster or a natural disaster or an emergency. But I'm going to show you how that there are some limitations to how we can use social media, such as initially tracking how people respond to the messages that are shared on those channels. So just a quick overview of the NCH and ATSDR mission. The NCH and ATSDR basically protects people from threats in the environment, from the air we breathe, the water we drink, and specifically exposure to toxic chemicals in the environment. Okay, so a little bit of background about how we use social media. At CDC, we have a pretty large social media presence. You can find CDC on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest. We're working on Instagram. But specifically on Twitter, you'll find a lot of CDC profiles on Twitter. So back in the early part of 2011, we worked to establish a Twitter profile for our then center director, Dr. Christopher Portier, to elevate the topic of environmental health on Twitter. All right, and just talking about when a disaster strikes and the roles that CDC might play, how many of you even knew that CDC played any kind of role in emergency response or disaster preparedness? Okay, good. So a lot of you did know that. So basically we do a lot of things, but we work with our local and state partners, when asked to respond to an emergency, we develop messaging that helps people get prepared for an emergency, et cetera. So here's a snapshot of what the Twitter profile has historically looked like. I want to briefly mention that Dr. Chris Portier is no longer the director of NCH or ATSDR. He actually retired earlier this year. So if you're actively on Twitter right now looking for this handle, it no longer exists. We've transitioned that Twitter profile to reflect that of our acting director. And I'll give that handle at the end of today's presentation. But we have a great example here of an emergency preparedness message. And that's about a winter storm safety tip. You see we keep good actionable information there with a link to go to a web page that contains the full set of information. So in addition to emergency preparedness information, we leverage the Twitter profile to share just general information about the work done at NCH and ATSDR. Here's an example of this machine we use to measure the amount of chemicals that people might be exposed to in tobacco smoke. So I tweeted a picture about that, along, again, with a link to more information. All right, so talking about social media and emergencies. So it's probably not surprising to everyone in this room that there's a growing number of mobile web-enabled mobile devices in use. So I think I looked at some numbers, and currently there's about 137 million web-enabled mobile devices in America. That's smartphones, that's tablets. That number is projected to grow to 192 million by 2016. What I thought was interesting was in 2012, the number of web traffic that was coming from mobile tablets actually outpaced that of the web traffic coming from smartphones. And by the end of this year, it is projected that there will be more mobile devices on Earth than people. So people are using web-enabled mobile devices like smartphones and tablets. Facebook and Twitter and other social media applications are among the most popular app downloads for these devices. And social media use actually sees a spike in activity during a disaster or emergency response. And what we're seeing is that, people are using social media sites as basically news aggregators. People get a lot of their news now from sites like social media, from like Facebook and Twitter. But especially during a disaster, it's the immediacy that people seek when they're looking for important information. We're seeing that they tend to go directly to Facebook or Twitter to get information like that. We saw some examples of this during the Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Joplin, Missouri tornadoes. Again, social media was the first, was some of the first ways that people actually got some information immediately following those disasters. Twitter played a key role in generating the first photos of the Tuscaloosa destruction. And immediately after the Joplin tornado, a Facebook group was created that gained around 123 members to mobilize community support and actually help people connect with their lost loved ones. So, of course, Hurricane Sandy was happening right around this time last year. It was the deadliest and most destructive storm of the 2012 Atlantic hurricane season. Caused about $65 billion in damage and affected 24 states, with severe damage in New Jersey and New York. All right, and here are just some key facts about how Hurricane Sandy and social media were happening. So Facebook and Twitter, again, key venues for sharing information about the disaster. Sandy actually became the number two most talked about topic on Facebook during 2012. And 1.1 million people were mentioning the word hurricane on Twitter within a 21-hour time period prior to the storm's landfall. Instagram played a key role. There were 10 storm-related pictures per second posted around the time of Sandy's landfall. And Skype, the internet-based phone messaging system, received a 122% spike in traffic immediately following the storm. So I also wanted to point out that social media can be a key way of sharing misinformation. You're probably all familiar with this image of altered photos of a storm cloud appearing over the Statue of Liberty. Of course, that was fake, but that definitely made its way around social media with hundreds of thousands of people sharing it. All right, so now that we've talked a little bit about how social media is really active during emergencies, I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of how we use social media in emergency response. So as I've mentioned earlier, CDC and the National Center for Environmental Health play a role in emergency communication. But what we've done when we started using social media, and when we particularly saw that there might be value in leveraging it to use during emergency situations, we basically combed through all of our emergency response and emergency preparedness web pages to see which content we could pull out and easily turn into social posts. So we basically created a pages-long document of content that was important to use for Twitter, for Facebook. And here's a quick example of just some Q&A that we developed. We've done Twitter chats before around the topic of emergency preparedness, so this is our most basic information of what do I need to do to be ready for a hurricane, ice storm, extreme heat, or a zombie apocalypse. And I just want to let you know I was not on the team that did the incredible zombie apocalypse campaign, but... So basically, with that in mind, we coordinate the distribution of messaging across CDC teams. I don't know if any of you follow the Twitter profile CDC Emergency, but that has well over 1 million followers. We coordinate our messages through a phased messaging concept. So basically, we know what people need to know immediately preceding, in this case, landfall of a hurricane to all the way 2 to 4 weeks after the storm has hit and people are recovering. Here's a quick example of the fact that we leverage Facebook as well as developing some of that content into Spanish language. We used SMS text messaging by offering people a subscription SMS service so that they could receive information if they weren't connected to our social channels. We also participated in a Twitter chat with ABC's Dr. Rich Besser on how to stay safe after Sandy. And that reached a potential audience of over 8 million people. What we saw that was key of social media use was that the retweet or the retweets of our content really amplified our messaging. So that we saw this great ripple effect where we would post a message, it would get shared on the other CDC channels, particularly the CDC Emergency channel that has all those millions of followers, and it would just sort of ripple throughout the state and local and individual people affected around the area and sharing that information. A total of over 5,000 tweets were sent from the five CDC accounts listed here. We had a potential reach of over 130 million people, but when we adjusted that, we're looking at realistically it was more around a little over 8 million people, and we used a tool called Radian 6 to analyze that. Here is a chart of our overall activity that marked our when we would post a message and how it would sort of make its round through retweets and shares. And we saw this impact our follower count as we would share all the information and see it shared across channels. Here's a great example of how of our follower count in early October, which was just under 4,000. Right by the time we had finished giving all the Hurricane Sandy information, we were just under 5,000. We're a little under 7,000 today, and we estimate that with every tweet, we gain 2.5 followers. Some other outcomes that we saw were an increase in web traffic. I will highlight, because I think I'm running out of time here, but I'll quickly highlight the fact that one message that we posted on the safe cleanup of mold following a flood numbered around 14,000 visits. Just 3 weeks prior, we measured that same web page, and it had about 700 visits over a one-week time. So we were seeing a lot of traffic generated from our Twitter feed coming into these specific web pages.
1 minute.
Okay. Great. So here's an example of engagement. You'll probably hear any social media presentation talk about the importance of engagement. So this person was able to ask us about ideas to fix mold in his bedroom. So we were able to give him some advice on where to go next and a link to, again, more in-depth information. I'm running out of time, so I will quickly get to our lessons learned. Basically, We suggest that social media can be a deeply valuable tool for disseminating emergency preparedness and response information, particularly when your content is planned in advance and you have a coordinated strategy to distribute that messaging through phased messaging, especially when you can engage with your followers and answer any questions and promote good advice. Finally, one thing that we are noticing that is a challenge to using social media is we haven't yet identified a tool for specifically measuring how many people acted on some of the advice given through social media. So we know that a lot of people necessarily went to the mold cleanup page, but we can't accurately measure how many people acted on that advice and took the advice that they saw on the page. Finally, Twitter will now allow you to sign up for Twitter alerts on your phone in the case of an emergency. So it's nice to see that Twitter has taken a proactive stance in doing something like that. And here is the updated Twitter profile. It's at @CDC_DrAketa. If you're on Twitter right now and you want to follow that profile, we'd be happy for you to do so. Thank you very much for your time today, and I look forward to any questions at the end of the presentation.